How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
When you have a child with type 1 or you are an adult with type 1, you see a lot of doctors just like everybody does, and there's a lot of misconceptions. So to have the chance to talk to dental professionals about type 1 diabetes is something that I'm really excited to do. You know, you want to do right by your patient. You don't want to be judgmental. You're not trying to be harsh, but you may not know everything there is to know about type 1 diabetes. And I really am of the mindset that unless you live with it, it is very difficult to understand. If you're not an expert in type 1 diabetes, you can't live well with it. So acknowledging that, even to a child, look, you're the expert here. Do you have questions for me or mom and dad? I know you have, we have some new information I'd love to share with you. I just think acknowledging that would go a really long way to, you know, leveling the playing field, so to speak, so we don't see you as a lecturer.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast guy genist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists, episode number 188. My name is Andrew.
This is Michelle, and we are coming off an RDH under one roof high. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Oh my God. This was, here's the thing. After all of these conferences, while I love them so entirely, I'm always drained, except for this time. This time I'm not.
Multiple times Andrew has done like a pizza tour. He's gone to a baseball game. Like, Andrew lives the damn dream on these. I'm so sorry that you're drained. I could kill you. It's exhausting, though. Either way, it's still exhausting.
And I feel like, yeah, we work hard. We do all these things, and it's like, go, go, go. But this time, I think the direction I was actually trying to take all that was, we had Lacey and we had Brittany here to help us, and they saved our lives. And it was the most like peaceful, relaxing, like just awesome, highly productive show we've been at in a long time.
You know, I think maybe our listeners don't know how we have actually grown in the last year. So if you're new to the podcast, we started off with just Andrew and I kind of doing all the things, everything. And this podcast grew enough that we were struggling to keep it going because we both have very more than full-time jobs. We are well over 40 plus hours a week in addition to this podcast. And we grew enough that we could get sponsors and we brought on team members. And that's amazing. Like, cause this is not something we ever saw this podcast becoming. We just thought we were talking dentistry and having a good time and no one would listen to us.
Yeah. I mean, it's been, just really marvelous. And we're very thankful for, you know, the good fortune that we've had, that we've just, you know, continued to grow. And, but yeah, it takes a lot to continue to grow. And so we have, I think, what, 5 employees now. I think we brought on the people over at Podigy to help us out with the recording and the editing and all that kind of stuff. And it allows us to really focus on the content, which is kind of where our passion is anyway.
Exactly. So thank you to Brittany, who is doing a lot of our admin stuff. And thank you to Lacey, who's doing a lot of our CE stuff. So all your tests that you take to get your CE, that's all Lacey. And we appreciate her so much for that. Quite honestly, though, we appreciate every person that came up and said hi to us at RDH Under One Roof, every person who is spreading the word about this podcast, who tells your friends, who sends us messages, who interacts with us, who brought me presents at RDH Under One Roof. I got the coolest t-shirt that says drink wine from here. And it's a picture of Washington. Melissa brought that. That was such a great surprise.
Washington people, huh? How about that? We are awesome here.
Washington people are great. I know I will not remember every name of the people that came up to us. So just a cumulative thank you for saying hi and supporting us, really.
And it was really successful over at that PDT booth. We're doing a special project for one of our student roundtables. You guys have probably heard about it on some of the past episodes, but we had real life hygienists. There was a variety of, I'd only been out a couple of years, so I've been practicing for more years than they wanted to say on the podcast. And they would come on and they just did a really, really good job of giving some great advice. And then they would pull their friends over, and then they would disappear for 20 minutes, and then they would pull one of their friends over again. And so, thank you to everyone who participated in that. I think we had at least 30 people do that, which, you know, we didn't have a whole lot. We were only there at the booth for not very long. And wow, it was really amazing. So, and then thank you to PDT for letting us occupy some of their booth space and giving us power so we could plug in all the microphones and stuff.
Yes, yes. Always thank you to PDT. But we have a really great podcast for you guys again today. Actually, I do appreciate all of you sending us messages about how great the content has been recently. You know, I think the series approach that we took since the beginning of the year has been really great, and it continues. So we are going to be speaking with Stacy Sims, who is going to tell us all about type 1 diabetes. And we talk a lot about type 2 as like clinicians, right? Like we keep an eye out for a lot of medications, and we know that diabetes has a huge oral manifestation, and uncontrolled diabetes and uncontrolled perio and oral diseases, they kind of go hand in hand. But Stacy breaks down some serious stuff for us, and especially with the type 1 diabetics. And she's not a clinician, but she is a woman who is passionate about it because she has a child that has type 1 diabetes. So you guys are really going to learn a lot. I do appreciate you all saying that you listen again and again, so just so you could absorb the information. And I have no doubt that this podcast is going to be any different. So thank you to Stacy for this podcast.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
Welcome, everyone, to the interview portion of the Tale 2 Hygienist podcast. We have a very special guest with us today. Today, we're going to be focusing on diabetes, specifically type 1. And we searched out the best person that we could possibly do this, a fellow podcaster, Stacy Sims. Welcome to the show, Stacy.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for asking me.
For sure.
Now, just to give our audience a little bit of a heads up of how we came across Stacy, we belong to several of the podcasting groups on Facebook. And every now and again, there will be kind of like a roll call, like, hey, who wants to be a guest on a podcast? And Stacy, I think you said, this is what I'm good at speaking on. And right away we jumped and we kind of clicked just like that.
Yeah.
And it was so cool to see you want to talk about this because, as I'm sure we'll get into, when you have a child with type 1 or you are an adult with type 1, you see a lot of doctors just like everybody does, and there's a lot of misconceptions. So to have the chance to talk to dental professionals about type 1 diabetes is something that I'm really excited to do because there are a lot of, I've no fault of anyone's really, just in terms of the education that's available, there are a lot of misconceptions.
So maybe start off with telling us your story. Tell us how this came about for you.
Sure. Well, to the very beginning of it is my son, Benny, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes right before he turned 2. So he was 23 months old, and we were told, your kid has type 1, which used to be called juvenile diabetes. get to the hospital right away. And we had this 3-day intensive education, and then they sent us home. And we had to learn how to manage. I have a daughter who's 3 years older as well. So I had a 5-year-old daughter and now an almost 2-year-old with type one. Our lives had turned upside down, and slowly but surely we learned how to do this. My son is now 14 years old. He's going into high school this fall. My daughter is off to college. And I started the podcast in 2015. So 4 years ago now, 4 years ago this summer. Because my background is in broadcasting. I was a radio and television reporter. I was a radio show host here in the Charlotte, North Carolina area for many years. And I had stopped working full time, but I wanted to continue doing something with broadcasting. I love podcasting. I have always listened to a bunch of podcasts, even when you had to plug your iPod into your computer and download them, you know, not this fancy app on your phone now that we have. So I wanted to start a podcast about type 1 diabetes because I wasn't hearing a news-focused show like that. There are some great personal stories about type 1, especially from adults who live with type 1 out there. But from a journalism and broadcasting standpoint, I wanted to be able to interview anybody I could and get information about type 1. So that's how Diabetes Connections started. And we've been doing it for 4 years now.
Wow, it's amazing. And you're putting out content really regularly.
Yeah. So the show is produced weekly. We do every week but Christmas. And we're up to, and I do some bonus episodes too. So I think we're up to like 235 episodes or something. But it's everything from, you know, there are athletes and celebrities who live with type 1 that I talk to, you know, NFL players and people who perform on Broadway, and you've seen them in the movies. But we talk to healthcare technology CEOs, people who make insulin pumps and continuous glucose monitors. We talk to the insulin manufacturers about pricing. We talk to everyday people living with type 1. You know, we really run the gamut and try to get information and inspiration, because it's a lot that goes into living this life.
Have you ever been any like surprised by any things that your guests have said? Things that you thought that you already kind of knew, but then you're like, oh, well, maybe I'm not right about that.
Oh my gosh. The number one thing, and this came up very early on in the podcast as I started talking to adults who were diagnosed as adults with type 1, is the incredible amount of misdiagnosis that happens. And I'd kind of heard about that, but you know, I had a little guy, he was 2. As I said, type 1 used to be called juvenile diabetes. So in children, they kind of look for it more. But it turns out that more than a third of adults with type 1 are initially misdiagnosed as having type 2 diabetes. And I can kind of give you those definitions. I know you know them, but if you want a little refresher on them in a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But it was amazing to me that they were misdiagnosed. And the study that came out this year said not only are, I think it's 38% of adults with type 1 are misdiagnosed initially with type 2. In many cases, that goes on for years and years. And while there are similarities, they're incredibly different in how you have to treat them day to day. So it can be very dangerous. That absolutely shocked me to find that out. And I talked to guest after guest where it had happened.
So I guess that is kind of shocking to me, because I feel like we hear about type 1 diabetes as children. Like it's an early diagnosed thing. Usually I thought that's a high percentage for people to be adults and diagnosed.
More than half of all cases of type 1 diabetes are in people over the age of 20. And that number is growing. And that's new diagnoses of people with type 1. And the reason is it's not really known why the cases of all type 1 are increasing across the board, but it's not something that you're born with and then they discover, you know, at age 1 or 2 or 3. It's something that you may be born with a genetic propensity, but it has to be triggered. It's an autoimmune disease. So it can happen at any age, just like any autoimmune disease.
And what's normally triggering it?
Well, it usually seems to be a virus. It can be any kind of stressful event on the body. I mean, think about what triggers any autoimmune condition, right? If we really knew.
Stress, usually.
Right. It could be stress. It could be an illness. It could be a life event. It could be, you know, a hospitalization for something else. If we knew exactly what really triggered it, wouldn't that be great? Because maybe we could avoid it. But again, it's like any autoimmune condition where they're not really exactly sure. And it's also very difficult to pinpoint when. So my son, for example, was very ill in the month leading up to his diagnosis. He had a urinary tract infection, very unusual in little baby boys. He had some kind of weird thrush in his mouth. You know, what's wrong with his throat? But they think that that was because his blood sugar was uncontrolled. So the body was, you know, reacting to that. The triggering event probably came months earlier in a virus that came and went. And we may not have even have noticed.
So can we go back to those definitions and talk about the difference between type 1 and type 2?
Absolutely. And it really starts when you think about how the body breaks down food. So when I gave presentations to my son's preschool class, right, or in kindergarten, I would say, who here eats food, right? Do you guys know that food is the fuel for your body? And everybody say, yeah, the food is the fuel. That's how our bodies go. But what happens is your body needs to break down that food to make it into fuel. And the way it breaks it down is through insulin. So everybody needs insulin. Everybody has insulin in their body. Most of us produce it naturally. When you eat, and this is a very simplified explanation, when you eat, your body breaks down the food, breaks down the sugar, and turns it into energy. And you need insulin in order to do that. In people with type 2 diabetes, your body is still producing insulin. But for many reasons, and often these are called lifestyle reasons, but, you know, obesity, sedentary lifestyle, huge genetics are so important when it comes to type 2, genetic propensity. And now they're thinking more and more environmental reasons that we're not really clear on. But for many reasons, your body is producing insulin, but it's not working efficiently. So it can't break down that food. It can't break down that sugar and convert it into energy. So that sugar is kind of swirling all over your body, and it's extremely damaging to all of your organs. In type 1 diabetes, the autoimmune condition kicks in. So for some reason, the body attacks itself. That's an autoimmune disease. A virus comes in, it triggers this attack. Your body kills the virus, but it goes bananas and kills the healthy cells as well. So it kills the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. So with type 1 diabetes, the insulin is not there. I mean, there's some, not to get too nitty-gritty, there is some insulin production still happening, but it's just not enough. So you have basically no insulin. So there's no way to break down that sugar. So you have these two very different conditions that are basically resulting in the same thing. All of the sugar swirling around the body and damaging your vital organs. So with type 1 diabetes, you must inject or infuse insulin every single day, several times a day, to replace what's not in your body. With type 2 diabetes, many times people can control it with diet or exercise and reverse the symptoms. So they don't need to take insulin. They can get their body more efficient. But contrary to what you see on Facebook or may read in the magazine at the supermarket, there's no way to cure type 2 diabetes. The symptoms will go away. But if you go back to eating as you ate before or doing what you were doing before, the symptoms will return. So that's a very, very basic explanation. And type 2 used to be called adult onset, but now people are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes at younger ages. So they've changed the names from juvenile and adult to type 1 and type 2. There is also a type of diabetes, and I used to get some really strange looks when I talked about this one, but people are more familiar with it now, but it's called type 1.5 or LADA, and it's latent autoimmune diabetes in adults. And what happens with type 1 in kids is that it almost always presents very acutely. Andrew, you alluded to this earlier, right? A kid gets it, they get all these signs and symptoms, and boom, they're diagnosed. It happened like that, it seems. But when with adults many times, and this is why the misdiagnosis can happen, LADA is sneakier and slower. So it kind of happens, but it's slower. You don't really notice the signs and the symptoms. And an A1C may creep up, which is how you measure if you have diabetes. But it may creep up slower. The symptoms may be slower, but it really is very similar to type 1. And a lot of health practitioners are becoming more familiar and learning more about it. But that's the sneaky one. Then there's gestational, and there's other types of diabetes as well. So basic explanation of a very complex condition.
When we're talking about A1C levels, in many offices, dental offices nowadays, we are looking for that. Do you by chance know the number that we need to be zeroing in on for, hey, caution, and then, hey, this is like uncontrolled now?
Yeah, I think what the American Diabetes Association has put out is that in adults, they like the A1C to be under 7 or under in adults. And they like it to be 7.5 or under in children. And I'll be honest with you, I almost always mess up the definition of the hemoglobin A1C. But again, in layperson terms, it's a measurement of your red blood cells for 3 months. So most people with diabetes every 3 months or so will get an A1C number from their doctor that will tell them kind of how they're doing. And it's almost, we refer to it kind of as a report card, which I hate, but it's this measurement that you can use to see what you're doing with diabetes management and what may need to be changed. A person without diabetes should probably have an A1C of 4 or 5. And then pre-diabetes can be anywhere from, depending on your doctor and your family history, pre-diabetes is usually in the high 5s to the high 6s. Anything over, I was going to throw out a number there, but I won't. This is one of the things that I'm really hopeful to talk to you about, because when you get to higher numbers, as someone who may see a patient once or twice a year, not for diabetes, I think it's got to be very difficult for you all to not only interpret those numbers. If you ask, like, hey, what's your A1C? And they say, oh, it's 9. Well, you may say, oh, that's terrible. What are you doing? Are you ignoring your diabetes? Where that might be a teenager who last time had an A1C of 11 and has really, you know, come to the realization that they need to get back on track and they're working hard, or they may have other health issues. So we can kind of talk about that, but I'm hesitant to throw out a number where you should be concerned, because I think the answer, and I'm going to say this a lot, you might get sick of it, is to ask the person in your office, to ask the patient, is this something that I need to think about? Because they may tell you, no, I have an endocrinologist and we're working on it. And there's a lot more context to it. Depends on the relationship you have with the person. But that's one of the problems with A1Cs. It's just this number, and it doesn't give you the real snapshot, the real full picture of the person's diabetes management.
So it would be very similar, I guess, to the conversations we have with our patients about blood pressure. Making sure that they're actively seeing someone, is a 150 over 85. Is that a good number for you? When's the last time you had a discussion with your doctor about your medications? Do you routinely check it? So it sounds very similar to something we would talk about with patients regarding blood pressure.
I think if it's coming from a place of where you're actively trying to learn about their health to help them and they feel that way, rather than a place of judgment, or a place of, well, I need to know this number so I can write it on the chart and move on to my next patient. You know, as long as you have that relationship with them, you know, it's funny. I polled my Facebook group. I have a closed Facebook group for the podcast, and I asked them what they would like their dental professionals to know. And most of them, I'm looking to go through some of the specifics, but most of them said, please, please don't judge me. Please come at me with questions of learning, of questions of empathy, and understand that I don't want a lecture about diabetes. I have a diabetes doctor, and I just want you to be my dentist.
We heard very similar things we just recorded also previously with some other fellow podcasters. It was, you know, kind of a systemic condition as well, and they were saying the same thing. Like, this is like the biggest thing that the whole group wants us to understand, is like, don't be judgy.
I think it's difficult because we see our healthcare professionals for what, 15 minutes, a couple of times a year, maybe. So it's difficult to have that authentic relationship, especially maybe the first time you're seeing somebody. And, you know, you want to do right by your patient. You don't want to be judgmental. You're not trying to be harsh, but you may not know everything there is to know about type 1 diabetes. And I really am of the mindset that unless you live with it, it is very difficult to understand. Even a pediatric endocrinologist who doesn't have type 1 diabetes or doesn't have a child with type 1 diabetes, they may be extremely helpful. Our endo does not. He doesn't have type 1. He doesn't have a child with type 1. And he is fantastic. But he'll be the first to admit he doesn't really know what it's like to live with it. And it's such an intense condition that it's difficult. So I think empathy is definitely number one. I don't know how you do that as you approach somebody when you're just going to, hey, we're here for a cleaning. By the way, let me approach you with understanding and empathy. I'm not trying to say that that's easy either. But I think opening with, hey, I'd like to talk to you about your diabetes because it's really important to your overall health, including your mouth, including your health there. But I'll be the first to admit that you're the expert when it comes to type 1 diabetes. What do you think I should know? Something as simple as that would blow my mind if I ever had a doctor, a pediatrician, a dentist, an orthopedist who said something like that to me and my kid. I would hug them.
I'm actually actually, so, well, here on the podcast, we talk a lot about motivational interviewing and really changing the conversations that we have with our patients so that we engage with them differently, instead of coming at them as the expert, coming now at them as a coach and a guide and in the process with them. So I'm hoping our listeners are continuing to hear this from patients, because I think I agree. We're all tired of being shamed. It doesn't matter where you go, what you're doing. You could go to your, get your car worked on. And they're like, oh, you haven't rotated those tires in 5,000. I'm like, ah, crap. Like, it, you know, life, like, get off my back. Like, I think if we can just start to engage with our patients and meet them where they're at. And I'm curious as to, within that Facebook group, what's their dental IQ? Like, you know, how much do they know, and what could we help facilitate as far as education with the implications of being a diabetic and caring for your mouth?
Sure. I don't know the answer to what their dental IQ would be, but the number one question that came up was about children and treating low blood sugars overnight. So what can happen is that, you know, you're trying to keep your blood sugar in a healthy range. For most people with type 1 diabetes, the currently accepted, I'll put in quotes, the current range is 80 to 180. And I know some people just went, oh, 180, oh my heavens, you know, but if you don't have type 1 diabetes, trust me, this is the range. So 80 to 180. And in toddlers, that range may be even higher because they're very sensitive to insulin. And low blood sugar can be very dangerous. As you know, Andrew and Michelle, low blood sugar, when that happens, your body is not getting the sugar it needs for that fuel. Most importantly, your brain is not getting it. So extended low blood sugars are dangerous. Low blood sugars, my son has been low a ton in his life, in his 14 years. You know, he'll dip down, we'll treat it, he'll go back up. You treat it with simple sugars, with juice, with glucose tabs, with dextrose candy, whatever. Very simple stuff, very simple sugars, and he's fine. But extended low blood sugars can be dangerous. So when your child is at a blood sugar of 55 at 2 a.m, you're going to run in there and treat. Most people treat with juice. Most people do not then wake their child up, who's probably half asleep and sucking from a straw, and half these kids can do it in their sleep. You're not waking them up to brush their teeth. Now, we've been really fortunate because we have never treated an overnight low with anything but juice. I promise you, in the 12 and a half years that my son's had type 1. Wait, I did the math wrong. In the, where are we? Yeah, 12 and a half years. Oh my gosh, I was going to say it was less than that. We've never treated with anything but juice, and he has no cavities. But there's a lot of concern about that. So that would be the number one question from the group. I don't know if you have an answer, but that's something that the hygienist could certainly address.
So are they saying that they are seeing that in their children, that they're having a higher rate of cavities, or are they just concerned in general? Like, it, we understand that this could be a problem.
They're concerned. And a few people had also said that they had been, I don't want to use the word shamed. They're concerned about getting cavities. They don't have the cavities, but they also talked about instances where the doctor said, or the dentist told them, you must, you know, wake them up and brush at night. And they were like, that's not going to happen.
This is interesting because the dentist that I work for in South Carolina, he has a granddaughter who has type 1 diabetes in San Francisco. And so this was something that he and I have been discussing through the years, because they give her actually, I think, a yogurt or something in the middle of the night. It's not juice, it's yogurt, which, you know, that usually has a decent amount of sugar in it. And he was like, what can we do to wipe her mouth out or follow it up with something so that, cause she is starting to get some areas of decay. And I don't have a necessarily a good answer to this. And I would love if any of our listeners are working with patients that have type 1 diabetes with this. Our first thought is always xylitol, but I'm also thinking that it's more of what you do during the day as well. And as long as there's a lot of variables that are under control, the pH is controlled throughout the day, you're not eating candies and you're not exposing your mouth to an onslaught of acid throughout the day, maybe you might be able to get away with some nighttime juice and it not be the end of the world.
We're really fortunate because my aunt is a recently retired dental hygienist, had been a hygienist for 30 years and had managed several dental offices. So she was just an amazing go-to for us. And she said pretty much exactly what you said, Michelle, was that overnight it's going to happen. Maybe, you know, you use a straw so it's not going directly to the teeth, but at the same time, you've got the saliva. But she said during the day, you do as much as you possibly can. Maybe throw in an extra brushing, educate about good diet and hygiene anyway, the whole family, not just the kid with diabetes, and to consider sealants when they get their adult teeth, because I guess you can't do that on the baby teeth. So we did that for both of my kids with and without type 1. And she also pointed out, and it made me feel much better when we were younger, that it's a lot of this is also genetic. And a lot of you have to do what you can do, right? You don't want to just give up and say, well, everybody in my family had cavities. But having type 1 diabetes, if you take care of it, doesn't mean that all those low treatments are going to make your teeth fall out. And of course, that hasn't been our experience. So I felt really fortunate to have her in our corner.
No, I think, and you know, honestly, there's some really cool products out there that like a Basic Bites, which is like an arginine, which it's a candy. It's I think it has xylitol in it and it's great for neutralizing the pH, but it's like a candy. It's a chew. Actually, when you chew on it, it gets down into, it's like a caramel chocolate and it gets down into the grooves of the teeth. And if it actually sticks in there, that's a good thing because then it's controlling the pH while it's stuck in the teeth. Xylitol lollipops, it doesn't have any, from what we understand, a spike in the glycemic index when you are ingesting it. I mean, it can give you some belly upset because the body sees it as a fiber. But if you're doing it in moderation, those things, xylitol is really wonderful. But also just like, a good brushing, making sure managing it throughout the day, because Lord knows we beat up our teeth through the day. So that nighttime, I just think if you're smart during the day, like you said, it would matter more.
One thing that came up over and over again in the group, the one comment that was really liked more than any other was to not tell patients things about type 1 that are not real. And then to not judge, to ask and learn instead of tell. So I think what this person is getting at is that there's a lot of outdated information. So things like, a dentist or someone telling a family that, you know, I have a grandmother who lost her leg, or, you know, you're going to go blind, or, you know, really bad, any issues that are very old and outdated thinking about type 1 diabetes. I mean, several generations ago, people didn't live. I mean, 100 years ago, type 1 diabetes was a death sentence. So this is not something that is ingrained in the medical community as, oh, it's easily controlled. And it's not easily controlled. It's a tough thing to manage. I won't kid you on that. But there are there's some comments in there and some personal experience that people shared with me. And this happens at lots of doctor's offices, not just the dentist. I'm not trying to single anybody out here, but where they'll say to you, oh, your A1C is 8. Well, you're going to be blind before you're 25. And that's a really difficult thing for people to hear. Now, I'll be honest with you, and this is kind of embarrassing to admit. When my son was younger, you think about the amount of doctors you see for a kid, especially. So we've got the dentist, we've got the eye doctor, we've got, eye, ear, nose, and throat when he has ears and ear infections, pediatrician. He probably, I'm trying to think how many injuries my doofus kid had for getting hurt. We were never back in the hospital for diabetes, but he like hit his head and lost a tooth that he shouldn't have lost. So we were seeing lots of doctors and they would all say to me, how's the diabetes? Is he well controlled? And that's a tough question because your idea of well controlled may not be my idea of well controlled. So I stopped giving a lot of information out. I used to say, well, here are our numbers and here's our time and range and this is my management and here's what my endo says. And I just stopped. And I would say for years, I would say, we're great. Yep. All good. We're great. And I would not give numbers and I would not share because I found that the more information I shared, quite often the more misinformation would be shared back at me. And I just got sick of it. So maybe not the best way to handle it. But when I'm seeing an eye doctor for 10 minutes, and my son's A1C went from a 7.1 to a 7.6, I don't need the lecture. I'm good. And I just felt like that happened more often than I wanted it to.
This is good feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, our default as hygienists is all about education, right? That's kind of that's our gig. That's prevent oral disease, like just in general. So how would be a good way, as we're talking to our patients, we still have things that we need to do for our job. We want to make sure that we're educating about, you know, the correlation between diabetes and periodontal disease. What's a good like bridge way of like discussing that without coming across as condescending or like know-it-alls or whatever, like sometimes we do?
Well, I think, and you know, we've been heavy on talking about kids, but to remember those half of people with type one who are adults, I think always starting the conversation with, hey, look, you know, I want to talk to you about oral health. I want to talk to you about taking care of your teeth and just making sure you're healthy your whole life long. And this is something I say to people with or without diabetes. And then say what you say with or without diabetes. And then at the end of that conversation, maybe say, you know, again, that's what I say to people with or without diabetes. I don't live with type one. And I read a lot that may say there are more risks, but what kind of questions do you have? And they may say to you, well, is there more of a risk for someone with type one or type two? You know, people may not know the risks that you are more educated about. They may say, well, I'd rather talk to my endocrinologist. They may say, I'm good, you know, and just I'm done. But you've opened up the conversation that way in a way that suggests that you're willing to listen and learn. And you may also say, I understand a lot has changed even within the last 10 years. Because if you went to medical school for any reason 10 years ago, a lot has changed, and not just with type 1 diabetes. So to remain open and to tell your patient, look, I'm not the expert here. I do have a lot of information that I want to share with you. But I understand that type 1 is pretty complicated. Do you have questions for me? And if you really feel that this person needs this, that you're seeing signs and you're seeing, you could always tell them. But I think that opening it up with this is with or without type 1 helps the person remove the blame. There is so much guilt and blame and shame that goes along with all types of diabetes that for some reason doesn't go along with many of the other conditions. I mean, Michelle, you mentioned high blood pressure. I know tons of people with high blood pressure. Nobody feels bad about it. You know, nobody's like, oh, I'm so guilty and I'm going to get lectured on my high blood pressure. They take their verapamil, they move on. But with diabetes, all types, there seems to be this stigma of, well, you did it. You deserve it. You're no good. It's your fault. With whether it is, it's a lifestyle thing. And even with type two, as I mentioned earlier, sure, losing weight, exercising more is good for all of us. There's a huge genetic component with type 2. My husband has type 2 diabetes. He's the healthiest eater in our family. He gets, you know, he got regular exercise for years and years before he was diagnosed. He was pre-diabetic for many years. It's a losing battle. Everybody on his mother's side of the family has type 2. So all he can do is the best he can do. Right? It's not something to feel guilty about. It's a health condition. So when you as a health practitioner remove that blame initially and start talking to your patient like, look, hey, you're the expert, especially people with type 1 diabetes, they are the expert in their health. They're giving themselves several shots a day or they're infusing insulin. They may have, you know, a lot of technology that they're familiar with. If you're not an expert in type 1 diabetes, you can't live well with it. So acknowledging that, even to a child, look, you're the expert here. Do you have questions for me or mom and dad? I know you have, we have some new information I'd love to share with you. I just think acknowledging that would go a really long way to, you know, leveling the playing field, so to speak, so we don't see you as a lecturer.
I agree.
And we're very guilty of that.
Well, I think it comes with the limited time you have too. I mean, you're really trying to do right by your patient in a very short amount of time.
I would say that is something that we do get accused of quite often, is just being very brisk, being very direct. This is A plus B equals C, done. Let's keep going.
But and you can work within that. I mean, even to say, look, I wish I had so much more time with you. It's crazy. We all know that. And we love you, but we don't want to be there forever either. So if you just start out, look, I know we're really in a hurry and that stinks, but let's make the most of the time we have. And just open it up with that non-judgmental phrase, even if it's a stock phrase that you write down and start using. That's okay. We don't know it's stock. We're only there once or, you know, twice a year.
If you're lucky.
Do you feel comfortable, Stacey, talking about oral symptoms of diabetes, type 1 and type 2 both?
Sure, sure. I'm certainly not as familiar with type 2. And I'll be honest with you, it didn't really present that way. But yeah, we can go down that road. Do you have specific questions? Do you want me to just kind of fire it off?
Just go ahead and fire off. Just generally kind of like thinking like from our standpoint, like what should we expect to encounter, and then kind of any counsel and guidance that we can give to the patients in case we see these things.
Well, one thing I didn't bring up and that happened to my son was that we had some real dental problems very early on. So let me first say that the classic symptoms of type 1 diabetes, the ones that we're all supposed to look out for, are incredible thirst, extreme thirst. Not, oh, I'm so hot, I'm drinking 3 cups of water in a row. Every hour on the hour, a kid who drinks an entire sippy cup, 10 ounces, and immediately asks for more, who wakes up 3 times a night, who just can't go another mile without, in the car, you've got to pull over, I'll drink from a hose. So, incredible thirst. You've got, it goes along with that, increased urination. Several times a day, a kid who's maybe 8 years old starts wetting the bed, an adult who just is going and going and going all the time. Rapid weight loss. My son was 30 pounds and lost 3 pounds in about 2 weeks. So he went down to 27 pounds, which is a lot at that size, and increased fatigue. He just wanted to sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep. So those are the classic signs of type 1 diabetes. But something else that happened right after he was diagnosed, maybe 3 or 4 months later, is that he had incredible gum issues. He had 3 teeth. They told, and I'm so sorry, I don't know the technical terms for this, but they said he needed a baby root canal. And he wound up with 3 silver teeth. His baby teeth were, they just, I don't know if they were capped or removed entirely. It was so devastating and stressful that I have blocked a lot of it out. I apologize. I should have looked up the technical terms, but I don't want to go back.
It's okay.
No, we yeah. know what you're talking
so
about.
So it was at the time we thought, wow, this is from the low treatments. We're really messing this kid up. Absolutely not. There was not enough time between his diagnosis, and he hadn't had that many low blood sugars in that time to cause that. What we think happened, and I can't say for sure, but what makes the most sense to me is he had uncontrolled blood sugars, very, very high. His A1C when he was diagnosed was 11.5, which is incredibly high, not the highest I've ever heard. I've heard a lot of people with higher A1Cs before they are diagnosed with diabetes. That's a very unhealthy number. And I think because of that, his body had that sugar swirling around, like I said, and for him, it manifested in the mouth. So I assumed at that time we were going to have a lifetime of dental issues with this kid because of diabetes. Thankfully, we had excellent care. They did what they needed to do. He had some cool silver teeth that he could show off, which was cool when you're 2.5 or 3, I suppose. And we never had another issue. I mean, he had a little cavity here, a little thing there, but thankfully, he's going into high school, like I said, and those silver teeth are gone. They have fallen out because they were baby teeth, and he's really healthy, but it manifested that way. So I would say that's not a sign you can necessarily look for, because by that point, if we had not treated his diabetes, I mean, that was several months after his diagnosis. I hate to say it, he probably would have died. You can die of undiagnosed diabetes. Diabetic ketoacidosis is what happens. The acid in the body, those sugars that are swirling around, the acid builds up to such an extent that the body cannot tolerate it. So it wouldn't have been a sign so much, but it was something that happened. So I think in people with type 2, if you're seeing oral issues that just don't click for somebody of their lifestyle, maybe that would be a question to ask. Hey, have you ever had an A1C done? Are you having other issues? And certainly in somebody with type 1 diabetes, I'm not an expert. I don't think that the oral issues would show up before those classic symptoms, but they may be along with it, if that makes sense.
So let's say that they didn't quite realize what was going on. They had some of the classic symptoms combined with some of the oral manifestations that we would be seeing. And we ask, have you had like a blood panel done before, or do we specifically ask for A1C? What's our prompt question to have them go see a specialist or go have them see their medical doctor?
Well, that old saying, like when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. To me, everything's about diabetes.
Yeah.
So I would say, have you had an A1C done lately? Because that is something that most people's general practitioners will do, if not every year. They will do them often. If you have someone in your family who has type 2 diabetes, generally, as I said with my husband, they did an A1C for him every year. Not everybody goes to the doctor every year. I get that. My bias, and I should have said this up front, my podcast listeners tend to be better educated. They are up on all the technology. So we're very fortunate. It's a real subset of people with diabetes who also have access to technology and insulin. So overall, in the general population with type 1 and type 2, you know, you may have people who are, you know, for through no fault of their own, they're not as educated, they don't have access to education, or they don't have access to a doctor several times a year. So if you're the first person they're seeing and you suspect anything, I would ask them straight up about an A1C. And they may even say, what the heck is that? Say, well, it's just one indication, like your blood pressure, you know, or your cholesterol. It's an indication of your overall health. You know, it could be diabetes, but it's good to get that measured every once in a while. So I would ask your doctor about that.
Are there things that we should be having on hand in our dental office in case there is a medical emergency?
Oh, what a good question. You know, most people with type 1 are going to have stuff with them, but I think it would be, speaking from the realistic point of view of, oh my gosh, there's nothing in your diabetes bag. Didn't we just reload that 3 days ago? It would be fantastic if, you know, you could even keep a little bit of glucose liquid or glucose tabs. I mean, they sell them at Walgreens. They sell them everywhere. The difficult part for you, honestly, is how would you know when to use it, right? If you have a mom of a kid with type 1, she says, oh my God, he's having a low blood sugar. And you go, look, I have this handy glucose liquid. You can have it, mom. And there it is. But if you have a 35-year-old who's exhibiting these weird signs, right, low blood sugar can come up, can exhibit in many different ways. I'm not sure how you'd know and how you'd treat. So unless you really knew, I mean, hopefully the person would have a medical alert bracelet. You could look at it, or they would tell you, I am having a low blood sugar. So let's say best case scenario, you know it's a low blood sugar. It would be great if you could have something on hand like that. And that's just over the counter, you know, a low blood sugar. I think they call them shots. It's a little liquid, not an injection, or glucose tabs, something like that. The other thing that's nice to have, and I don't know if any dental offices give out things like lollipops or stuff like that. Like often where there are kids, there's stuff. So, you know, sugar-free is good. Sugar-free is not always great because, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, too much sugar-free will kill your stomach.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sugar alcohols.
Well, so if, are there better products for us to have in our office, like those glucose, I guess they strips, tabs, yeah, shots, or something like you mentioned earlier, juice worked really well, like a little fruit juice thing. Is that better or is it all the same?
No, it's really all the same. I mean, a 6-pack of Juicy Juice, 15 carb apple juice is, you know, you can throw that in your office. You can just leave it there. Probably won't go, it will go untouched until you decide you're thirsty and want a juice box at some point. But it, right. It's really amazing how it's just simple sugar. So for us, a 15 carb juice box works just as well as a 15 carb glucose liquid. Or I'm guessing the yogurt that you mentioned earlier, Michelle, was like a Danimals or like a little yogurty drink. A lot of people like those because along with the sugar, it's got some protein. And if you've got a kid that has a low blood sugar, oftentimes juice with protein, like we used to give peanut butter crackers along with juice, can really kind of hold you through the night. But if my kid were low at the dentist's office, a juice box or 15 carbs is pretty much, and 15 carbs isn't, some people would say it's outdated, but to me, it's the simplest way to explain. There's this rule of 15. If you're low, you take 15 carbs and wait 15 minutes. And then you recheck. Now, 15 carbs for a kid who weighs 30 pounds could skyrocket them up to a higher blood sugar. And somebody who weighs 250 pounds might not do anything. But the rule of 15 is a really easy, everybody can understand, starting point to figuring out what you need to treat lows. I don't know that I'd expect my dentist to have anything on hand. I mean, even if somebody has a Coke with their lunch in your office fridge, as long as you're willing to give that up, if somebody's having a low blood sugar, you know.
Oh, we'll make that.
Let's hope so. Yeah. So what about questions about, what's the last time you took your insulin? Like, what does that routine look like for you today? Did you eat before you came in? Are those questions important for us to ask as well?
I'm going to say no. I don't really think that you need to know what I ate or what I dosed. I think you could say, is there anything you'd like me to know about your diabetes management? Anything that's new since last time or anything going on today? Something like that. I don't like when people ask specifics. You know, did you take your insulin today? What did you eat for breakfast? None of your business. You know, I don't want, I may not want to tell you. But if you say, if you just say the same question, just a little bit different, you know, is there anything about your diabetes that's different today that you'd like me to know? You know, because that gives the person an opportunity to say, you know, I was starting to go a little bit low when I came in here. Let me just do one more check before you start that procedure. Or, you know, the last couple of weeks have been tough because I've had the XYZ going on in my life, but I'm okay. I mean, it's not really going to affect that dental appointment, but it might be an opportunity to let them know that you understand that diabetes is tough, and it might open opportunity for them to talk more about it. I would keep it pretty general. I'm trying to think of, unless you're doing a long procedure, like I had a teeth whitening procedure done a long time ago, and that took longer than I expected. I don't have diabetes, but if somebody wasn't planning to be in that chair for an hour or even two, that's a good opportunity to say, hey, you know, a lot of people don't understand how long this is going to take. Just want to make sure diabetes is cool. If I need to stop at any time, you know, anything I should need to know for the next hour or two, something like that.
I like that, actually.
So this came up. Somebody asked, and I'd never heard this, but I believe them. She says the anesthetic used for fillings can sometimes cause an adrenaline rush, and that can feel like a very low blood sugar. Can you plan for a patient to have access to their test kit and even expect it? So in other words, there are things that can go on during a dental exam or a dental procedure, really. So if you're doing injections or things like that, I don't know if you've ever come across somebody where you could say, look, sometimes there's an adrenaline rush. So let me ask you first, has that ever happened with one of your patients?
Multiple times.
Okay. Wow.
Yes. It's
diabetic patients?
It's not in diabetic patients necessarily, but in all patients, because there's epinephrine in certain of the
anesthetics. Yeah.
And so that everyone kind of metabolizes it differently.
So you may want to give them a heads up. If you're using something with epinephrine in it or anything that's going to get the heart racing, anything stressful, you may say, hey, I'm using this. Which some people find that they have more of an adrenaline rush. Some people don't. But it may feel a little bit different. And you don't even have to say, because of your diabetes, you might want to X, Y, Z. Anybody with diabetes will understand that an adrenaline rush will. So you might just say, look, this might feel a little different. If you need me to stop at any time for any reason, just let me know. That's fascinating. I had not experienced that myself.
I think one thing that maybe you could take back to the community as well and just give them the option is have them discuss it with the provider, whoever's giving the anesthetic, is there are options for epinephrine free. There are certain risks. I mean, it's not high risks, but you get maybe not quite the depth of numbness sometimes. The duration of numbness isn't quite as extensive. There's a lot of things that the epinephrine does kind of help the actual like lidocaine or xylocaine, whatever is the local anesthetic, last longer and be more efficient. But if they are consistently having these feelings and they don't like it, they don't understand it, they don't feel good about it, there are other options out there. They just need to talk to the provider about it.
That's great.
And I've worked in the past in clinics that where we performed a lot of surgeries. So we often had our patients who had diabetes bring their glucometer with them, and we would test before, during, after, especially for longer procedures where we were giving a lot of anesthetic.
Yeah, and I think that's fabulous. And now with continuous glucose monitoring, a lot of people can just look at their numbers on their phones.
Talk to us a little bit more about that.
Oh, sure. Okay. So there are a few different types, but overall, continuous glucose monitoring has come a long way. We've used one for 5.5 years now. And a wire goes under the skin, and you do this at home. This is not something that you have to have, you know, at a doctor's office. So you use a needle. There's an inserter. You push it in. The needle comes out and leaves a little wire under the skin. And then there's a sensor that is attached there. The wire is really the sensor. And then on the one we use, there's a transmitter that clips in. So it looks like a little rectangle of plastic on the arm, but the wire is sitting under the arm, and it measures interstitial fluid. So it's not measuring blood glucose from your blood, like a meter would that we're all, glucometer that we're all familiar with. It measures interstitial fluid. So it's not exact to a meter, but it's very, very, very close. And it's now FDA approved to dose insulin. So amazingly, my son has gone from 10 finger sticks a day when he was 2 or 3 to basically 1 or 2 a week at age 14, which is incredible. And the CGM, the continuous glucose monitor, initially would give you a reading on a receiver. Then it would give you a reading on the person who uses it, their cell phone. Now you can share it and the parent or caregiver can get the blood glucose reading on their phone. So my son is downstairs playing video games and I can open up my phone and see that what his blood sugar is. And his blood sugar, he woke up at 80 this morning, which is fantastic. And he's floated slightly higher. I'm like, I don't give specific numbers all day long. I shouldn't even have said the 80. I don't like to share his numbers. But I can see that he's probably eaten lunch and is playing some video games and is doing great, but has a little bit of adrenaline from the video games probably. But I can see it on my phone and I have alarms set. So if he hits a certain number, I can text him and say, dude, you're high, give yourself insulin. And if he's low, I can say, you need to treat. And if it's an emergency low, we have those different numbers set. It'll alarm and alarm and alarm until you turn it off so I can go help him out. So it's really amazing. So you may have somebody in your office who says to you, if it's a long procedure, would you feel comfortable holding my phone? Would you feel comfortable looking at, you know, the CGM? We did that when my son had his surgery when he was two, he was already on an insulin pump. And we said, would you feel comfortable if I kind of came in and helped after? I did not want to be there for the procedure, but if in the recovery room, if I came in a little sooner than most people do, and they were like, absolutely. And when I went back, so I was able to check his blood sugar and use his insulin pump. He actually didn't need any insulin. I remember this vividly. I had like 10 people crowding around me because they'd never seen a two-year-old with an insulin pump. And they all wanted to see it. So it was a really great time to educate. But you may have somebody who says, hey, my phone is right here. If it alarms, I need to grab it, or I may need to do something. So that's, there are several different brands. And I said you didn't have to go to the doctor, but there is now a new one. They can implant the sensor, that little wiry part. It goes under the skin. It stays in for several weeks. And it's really just remarkable to think about how far the technology has come. And most people would think, well, why would you want that under your arm? Like, that's crazy. But the sensors and all this technology, you know, you swim, you sweat, you run around, you can knock it on a door, you can, you know, you play sports. There are different ways that different people wear things. There are insulin pumps that you can wear on the skin. The whole thing is on your skin. So it's a pod, but it's the entire pump. There are insulin pumps like my son wears, which are tubed. The part on the body is teeny tiny, but then it has a tube that connects to an insulin pump that's the size of a pager. So if you've got a person with type 1 who wears technology, there's a lot of beeping going on in your office. And don't be afraid. You know, if you hear that, you can ask them about it. I don't think anyone would be offended if you hear a noise and you say, oh, do you need to take care of something? And if they say no, end of conversation. But if they say yes, you can ask some more. You could say, oh, no, that's my pump. Oh, do you mind if I ask you about it? I'd love to learn more. But you know how to read people. If somebody's like, I'm good. You know, but most of us are like, look at this, look at that. I want to show you this, you know.
That's how we are for sure. Look, yeah. This new thing I learned.
Right. So, oh, we're cool. So excited to show.
So Stacey, we're going to wrap up here in just a couple of minutes, but we always like to ask our guests at the very end if they have any advice very specifically for students who are in like dental hygiene programs currently and or just graduated, new graduates. In regards to for your topic, type 1 diabetes.
I think what I would like healthcare professionals to know, especially as they're just starting out, that it's okay not to know everything about every subject and to recognize that you will not know everything about every subject. I know it's difficult because you've been through all this intense training and this incredible education, but people who live with type 1 diabetes especially are experts. They know what they're doing. And let me put it this way, they know what they're doing and they know what they're not doing. So if someone with type 1 diabetes isn't, quote, taking care of themselves, they already know it. And they have strong feelings about that. And there may be things going on in aspects of their life that, you know, you may not understand or you may not be exposed to again in a quick dental visit. There's a lot going on. So your training on type 1 diabetes may have been a day, may have been half a paragraph in a book somewhere. You know, we understand that there just isn't a lot of education for all healthcare professionals out there about type 1 diabetes. So don't be afraid to ask your patients, to be open with your patients about what you do and don't know, to go ahead and try to maybe learn on your own, recognizing that in the last 10 years, a lot has changed. And that even in the last 2 or 3 years, more has changed. So I think that continuous education, if it's something you are interested in, is great. But if it's not, it's really okay to not have the expertise. We with diabetes do not expect healthcare professionals other than endocrinologists to be experts on it. And frankly, it kind of pisses us off when you try to be. Because like I said, we know what we're not doing. We know what we're supposed to do.
Right.
And we don't, just like you would not be happy if you went to the orthopedist and they were like, you know, I hear that the molars are really the root cause of hypertension or whatever. You know, you don't need, you don't want to hear somebody else try
to need to brush your teeth twice a day.
Right. You know, I read on the internet that when you boil okra, it'll get rid of all your cavities. I can't tell you how many times in my son's life I've heard, if you eat okra, if you eat cinnamon, if you have this pink shake, if you try this, stuff it. It doesn't work. So just more, but it's a roundabout way of saying what we started out with, a little bit more empathy, a little bit more thought. Even if, and I know this may make you laugh, but writing something down, like if you know you're seeing a patient with type 1 diabetes and you don't know what to say, it's okay to like write something down, think about it. Okay, is this good? They don't know that you practiced it. Just go in and say, hey, I'm not the expert here. You are. How can I help you? And that's an opening that after that, you can pretty much say anything. You know, you might have great information that the person doesn't know about in terms of dental health. Go ahead and share that. But if you already have the foundation of the person with type 1 is the expert, you're here to help them and not lecture them, I think you're really going to find people are very, very receptive.
Great advice.
Stacy, thank you so much. Your passion is so evident. We're so thankful that you were able to spend some time with us today. Thank you so much for that.
This was a great opportunity.
Well, I have a feeling that, you know, some of our listeners are going to want to reach out to you as well. Is there some contact information, some more information about your podcast where they can listen to more episodes?
Absolutely. So I'm at diabetes-connections.com is the website. We have a show every Tuesday. I'm on social media as Diabetes Connections and as Stacey Sims, and it's S-T-A-C-E-Y-S-I-M-M-S. And you can always email me, Stacey@diabetes-connections.com. If you are listening and you have type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you are feeling isolated, you don't know anybody else with it, please reach out because there is an incredible diabetes online community for all types of diabetes and you don't even know what's out there. There are so many people willing to help, so much community for you. So if you've listened to the show and you think, wow, you know, I want to know more from Stacey, but I'd really like to meet somebody in my neck of the woods, I promise you they are out there and I can help you find them.
And that goes for our patients too. Pass that information on. That's great. Stacy, thank you so very much. You're the best.
Oh my gosh. Thank you very much. What a fun time. I appreciate it.
Well, I said it before this interview and I think you guys are going to do this. You're going to listen to it multiple times because there was just so many takeaways, right?
Yeah. I mean, she has such a great voice too. So I think one thing that we forgot to say at the beginning is that she's a podcaster too. And so I know you guys heard that in the interview, but she has, you know, a command of language skills and all of those things. And I just love listening to her. I could just listen to a whole CE course. But she also does, I messaged her a little bit later on and I asked her a little bit about, could you come and speak at, you know, like a dental hygiene meeting? And it's not something that she'd probably, I mean, she has done keynotes before and she might not want to be necessarily in that realm again.
The CE of it.
But she would be more than happy to come and speak at any of the components. So feel free to reach out to her. She's just wonderful and would love to do that for you guys. So don't hesitate.
Yes, totally. And we want to thank PDT again for sponsoring the CE portion of this podcast, this little type 1 diabetes podcast. And if you guys are going to be at ADA or Dentsply Sirona, Greater New York, what else do we have? I think those are the three that we have left for this year, right?
Those are the three biggies for the rest of the year, yeah.
I'm actually going to be speaking at a Colorado study club. I'm going to be speaking at a study club in California, Rancho Cucamonga, and a few others, I think. So if you're a listener and you're in those areas, let me know because I would love to give you a hug too.
Yeah, yeah. And I will just be at those three and that's it. And also growing out my beard so I can put some beads in the beard hair.
Andrew, I thought we've moved past that. And also, I'm not sure. So you've said two things that make me feel very concerned about you. One, that you're growing out your facial hair and you're going to braid it. And two, that as a grandfather, you want to be called Pappy.
You don't think that that's a sweet name? I want to be like Grandpappy Andrew. And I'm very looking forward to being a grandpappy. Why do you not like Pappy?
I'm just really excited that that's many, many years from now.
Those are my two goals in life right now, everyone. So if you guys could do me a favor and go ahead and reach out to Michelle and tell her she's stupid, it's michelle@ataleoftwohygienists.com.
I want Andrew to take a facial picture every week of his hair because his sweet little wife will not tell him when he needs to cut his hair or his facial hair. So we, the listeners and his friends, need to inform him when he's looking a fool.
Can't we do a poll? Well, let's do a poll on social media and we'll take a picture of the beard hair and let everyone see. Here's the thing. First of all, Allison is supportive and loving. That's the big difference between you two. Like, I get the support and structure and the love from my lovely wife. And then I take the abuse from you every week on the stupid podcast that we do.
How often did you say on this podcast when you were growing your hair out that Allison just didn't care? She's like, do whatever you want.
Too many times. She's like, it's your body. You do what you want.
Do whatever you want.
But that's supporting me. She's being supportive. She doesn't agree with me, but she's being supportive and enabling in not a bad way, in a good way.
Well, there has been no question that I am not really a supportive person, that I am the person that gives you what you need to hear. And there is that.
You know what? That's your version of support. And I appreciate your version of support. We need all types of support out there, everyone.
All right. Well, for all those people who are done listening to this outro.
For all those people who turned it off a long time ago.
So many times ago. You can email us at ataleoftwohygienists@gmail.com or Andrew and I individually. So that would be michelle@ataleoftwohygienists.com or andrew@ataleoftwohygienists.com. And go head over to our website. Check us out, ataleoftwohygienists.com, because we have a newsletter. By the time this comes out, I think we're going to have a newsletter out. And it's actually happening, y'all. We talked about it. And because we have Brittany, that is our helper, who's so amazing, we are going to have an actual newsletter. So go over there, subscribe for that or to that. And then follow us on Instagram, follow us on Facebook. Be sure to share. And don't forget to leave us an iTunes review or rate us. We appreciate all of those things. You the best, y'all.
Hey, and don't forget, you guys spent a lot of time listening to our podcast. You deserve the CE credit. So head on over to CE Zoom. We have links in the show notes that might take a little bit for us to kind of update a little bit. Hopefully by the time this comes out, everything will be up and going. But CE Zoom hosts all of our CE tests. And so find the link that is provided by PDT. So make sure you guys are supporting PDT because they're supporting you in your CE needs.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Have a great week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, y'all.